I always thought Michael York's name had the ring of class. Well, it turns out he took his last name from York Cigarettes, which was a new brand at the time. I found that out in his new memoir, Accidentally on Purpose. The book tells about York's stage and screen career. He got his start in Laurence Olivier's fledgling theater company, the National Theater. One of the company's directors was Franco Zeffirelli, who later gave York his first film role in Taming of the Shrew. York went on to star in Romeo and Juliet, Cabaret, The Three Musketeers, Logan's Run, and Murder on the Orient Express. He's now living in Los Angeles, but with the exception of a short run on Knott's Landing, he hasn't done much American TV. The role he's probably best known for in America is the young Englishman in the film adaptation of Cabaret. He told me he was anxious to do the film, but he was horrified when he read the script.
Well, it was my own stupid fault. I'd agreed to do the film, and it was I knew the the Isherwood books, and I had seen the stage show, and I hadn't really studied the new script partly because I was involved. I was doing a film in Morocco for Philippe de Broca, and switched my attention on arriving in Munich, where the film was made, and read the script with a sinking heart because I realized that my character was exactly like Isherwood. I am a camera. He was a kind of passive observer, around him revolved these extraordinary extrovert characters, but he was a kind of a pallid, strange presence. And I wonder what on earth to do. I walked around Munich in the pouring rain all night, kind of flagellating myself mentally, not wishing to give the impression that I was a neurotic actor, but not knowing Bob Fosse. I'd met him at an audition. He seemed nice enough. But anyway, I plucked up courage and went to his hotel and unburdened myself. And to my delight, he agreed that indeed he thought the narrative passages needed some work on. And moreover, we had 2 weeks where all the song and dance numbers were to be rehearsed. And he wanted to work on the narrative in that time, and brought in Hugh Wheeler, this wonderful, wonderful writer.
Didn't he write the book of Sweeney Todd for
Stephen
Sondheim's
musical? He
did indeed.
Oh, yes, and Little Night Music, yes. And in his presence, we improvised and started kind of fixing things and trying out new things. And in the course of those 2 weeks, a real solid, I think, interesting character began to emerge. So it was a very valuable time.
Your character in the film Cabaret is clearly bisexual. Were there any discussions over that or fights over that? Anybody say, oh, no, we'll have to edit that part out. That won't do.
Not at all, no, no. I mean, it was, I suppose it was a sign of the times that one could, speak more freely about these kind of things. Isherwood had been unable to. In fact, I asked him, because he enjoyed the film. In fact, we read the notices together in his little house in Santa Monica, and I said, are you happy with it? And the only thing that he slightly kind of felt uncomfortable with was, in fact, the bisexuality of it all.
As opposed to homosexuality.
And I said, did you ever have an affair with Sally Bowles? And he said, no, but they did once go to bed. I think the apartment was full of guests, and they found they had to share a bed together. And I said, well, did anything happen? And he said, no. and that's as close as it went.
Let's talk a little bit about The Three Musketeers, directed by Richard Lester. He was playing around with a lot of new techniques in this movie, and you were doing a lot of sword fighting in the movie. So was there a lot of mayhem on the set during these comic scenes?
I think I say somewhere that comedy is usually kind of sheer bloody hell to make, and the most serious plays are usually full of kind of giggles and laughs. It's kind of rule of thumb. The Musketeers, it was hard work. I mean, for me, I had 11 major duels. So when I wasn't actually filming them, I was rehearsing them. But they were, people, the best laid plans, accidentally on purpose and all that. People did get hurt, almost, but not, you know, seriously hurt.
Did you get hurt?
Oh, yes. I mean, I think on the second day, we were dueling away, and the sequence called for me to be disarmed, and then I shout rather heroically for a sword, and I think Atos throws me one from the other side of this courtyard, and indeed he did, and it came scything through the air, and the sun was in my eyes, and I missed hold of it, and the whole thing kind of slashed right across my face and cut into my nose, and you learn that you do that with a kind of wooden sword. And also things happen in the heat of the moment. It's like a kind of real battle. The blood is up and the adrenaline's flowing, and you do things that, in other circumstances, a kind of simple caution would forbid.
Didn't you have a stuntman?
Oh, yes, but I remember my double got injured and I started doubling for my double. No, I mean, by and large, it's something actually that I feel very strongly about. It. In fact, we made a sequel to the Musketeers, and in fact, Roy Kinnear, who was a wonderful, wonderful actor who played my servant Kinnear, was killed as a result of a fall on the set, and it put things in a dreadful perspective. And it brought home the fact that what I was doing was, you know, potentially lethal. And it was a dreadful time, and one that I think, that cast a shadow for a long time and still does.
How did the people making the movie continue making the movie, especially making a comedy after the death of one of the actors on the set?
Well, it was terrible. I mean, it was, as you can imagine. But we all agreed to do it because we were halfway through, and, Roy's performance, we wanted to keep it there. So it was finished with a double and by, changing things around. I don't know why I kind of got onto this, because it's usually something one keeps quiet about. It's there in the book, because I felt if you're writing about, your life story, it's not all sweetness and light, and it's about things that affect you. Had a legitimate place. But I it's there. But obviously one feels uncomfortable talking about it.
You know, in addition to movies, you've done a lot of theater. You started your career in theater, but you've done Broadway in the United States. You went to the opening of Stephen Sondheim's A Little Night Music, and you write that sitting in the theater on opening night, you say, "My heart flooded with compassion for those about to be so cruelly exposed at the curtain's rise, all their hopes and ambitions at the mercy of the same small firing squad of critics." What bad experience did you have that made you feel this way?
Well, I know how they're feeling. It's a very nerve-wracking thing to be. And it's exciting, but it is the nervous tension does run high, and you do seek the approbation of the audience. But usually, it's not the audience so much. The audiences are fine. But it's the way that the system runs, and I think it's incredible. Especially, I'm speaking to you from New York, where the approbation of a single critic secures the success or failure of a play. It's a total nonsense. And my most recent Broadway endeavor, for example, was to work for Tony Randall, who had this brilliant idea of creating a repertory company to do the classics on Broadway at affordable prices with, actors working for scale. And the New York Times critic was so mean-spirited about this, idea, that I just gasped with disbelief that a man could write like in so vituperative a way and not to welcome the idea of someone trying to, do something about it.
Since some of your best-known roles are from Cabaret and The Three Musketeers, Logan's Run. Do you find that a lot of people don't realize that you're going on 50, that they think of you as being a lot younger than you are?
I don't know. It's always so hard to, the perceived apprehension that people have of you. I honestly don't know. I've never stopped working, and because the great thing about this job is that you know, there's no cut-off time, that you go on until, if you have your wits and your health, until you drop. Because, you know, there's no retirement age, and so you have, for example, you know, the glorious situation of someone like John Gielgud, you know, Prospero's book, still in his mid-80s, giving brilliant performances, or George Abbott at 105, still, still active. That's what I love about it.
I want to thank you very much for talking with us.
Well, thank you. I've enjoyed it.
Michael York's new memoir is Accidentally on Purpose. This is Fresh Air.